right now 600,000-700,000 surfers. So it's growing a lot. It's not a it's not a sexy product category as such. It's not. The same technology that is used in mobile phones.
This episode is sponsored by Foil Sessions, the foiling app that lets you track all your foiling sports. Cool. Then welcome to episode 65 of our podcast, Up on Foil, the podcast where we talk about foiling. Usually we talk about foiling. Today we have a little different episode. And let me just introduce us real quick. I'm Matt. I'm an average foiler living in Switzerland where, yes, it gets cold in winters. And with me today is Christian Dietrich. And he is the inventor, the founder of these guys. And this is not an ad. I actually got these for last Christmas, and I'm a little ashamed to say I didn't use them that much, but that's about to change. And thank you very much, Christian, for coming on the show and telling us all about you, about the product and why people need it. Is there, Christian, anything that you need to add right away so that people can follow?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the podcast, Matthias. Super stoked to be here. And I think it's relevant for all water sports people to know about surfer's ear, which is the problem you get in the ears after many years in water under 18 degrees. And the fix for it, surf ears, which is an earplug where you block the water, but you hear like normal. That's the main thing with surf ears compared to everything else.
All right. All right. Well, that's something that's super important. Obviously, for my personal view, I don't have problems so far. But still, I should use them. We're going to talk about that later. But my brother-in-law, he just had to go under surgery to fix surfer's ear. So it got quite close. That's actually why I got them for Christmas last year. And I've used them sometimes now. So yeah, let's get all into it. You had a similar story. You had that problem. Is that why you came up with the solution?
Yeah, exactly. So I've been in the water for as long as I can remember. I was a swimmer as a kid, competitive swimmer, started windsurfing at 14 and then surfing at 17 and then windsurfing, kiting, and now foiling. So I've been doing it all my life. And at around, well, when I was a kid, I had pain in the ears when I was in the water. So I had to use earplugs or, you know, this waxed cotton that you could put in the ears. And it was horrible because it blocked all the hearing. And on contests, I couldn't really hear the starts really well at sometimes. And then when I started surfing, it was like, it was real pain because you always blocked the hearing. And I was never happy with earplugs on the market. So then eventually I started getting more and more ear infections. I went to Portugal a lot surfing in my 20s and early 30s, and then I got a lot of problems in the ears with infections regularly. In Morocco at one point, one ear got blocked completely for 3 days, and then the other ear got blocked for 3 days, and I was at the verge of thinking either I have to stop surfing or find a better solution. And that's where the idea to the current product Surf Ears came about. And with a background in engineering and working with small mechanical parts, I sort of put one and one together that maybe you can make a hollow earplug with a membrane, test it out, and figure out that it works. And that's a long, long time ago, and we made a ton of, you know, prototypes for that. But it was a project at the time, sort of a side thing, but eventually it became, it gained interest enough among other surfers, windsurfers, water people, to figure out that we could probably make a business from this. And we started a small business and built it from there. So that was 2012, roughly, when we started that project, or when I started that with some friends. So that's been a journey since then.
Yeah, we're going to get into that startup phase. And just when you surfed, did you use these wax things as well or different earplugs?
No, I used basically everything you could buy at the Portuguese pharmacies and the Swedish pharmacies, which is the wax and then the formable silicone, the soft things that you just push in the ear. And they work super well for blocking water, but they also block sound, every single part of it. And then the Christmas tree style earplugs that you put really far into the ear. I didn't feel that those worked very well either. And then there were some sort of swimming earplugs on the market. Didn't really work, didn't really keep the water out, or it blocked too much sound. So I tried really everything and just figured there wasn't really any super good solution out there for, you know, getting the experience of surfing without the interruption of, you know, removing the sound, the hearing, the communication, the whole experience of being on the water, basically.
Did you do competitions as well, or was that just recreational surfing?
Yeah, so I started kite surfing really early in Sweden. So I was one of the first ones in Sweden who bought a kite in Germany at the time, because we couldn't get kites in Sweden. Brilliant. And we were a small crew of very passionate kiters here. And I got into competing in the early 2000s when the sort of world tour started. So I got to compete with some of the guys back then. During a couple of years, I didn't follow that full time. So I did my studies at the university at the same time, but I took the winter semester off and traveled as much as I could afford, you know, lived cheap abroad and followed 4 or 5 events every year. And that was a super fun time. And I learned to know a lot of people that I still know today, and I still meet in the foiling world today, actually. Nice. Which is really cool. And with that background, like I've always been in the element of water, and it was sort of natural to start to develop gear within that space. So eventually I ended up working for a water sports company as well, Boards and More, and did kiteboards, or developed kiteboards and equipment for them for some time.
Oh, really? What you do?
I was a kiteboard designer, a product manager. So the whole kite twin tip line was my responsibility there, and helped out on a lot of other stuff there as well. Worked on the surfboards with Sky and Jon Amundsen at the time as well. It was a fun time, a couple of years with them. And then I've always had my own products. I ran a kiteboard brand in Sweden called Tablas way back, and supplied boards to some of the riders on the tour and the local riders here. And it was always on a hobby level. It was always just fun, just because I'm interested in making stuff and making boards. So it's fun to be able to be sort of in the water sports industry still, even though Surfers is a very specialized product. We're working with a lot of the best athletes, and it's super fun to be in that space, I think, still, and help people. I mean, it really helps a lot of people be able to do their sport, because without it, they would either have to suffer like me, like not here, or just stop. Because eventually you have to, you get the problems. It's just a matter of time.
Is that and I really want to talk about it, because I have so many questions. But do you still kite surf at all anymore?
I don't kite surf anymore. I'm all into foiling now and some surfing still. I did have some injuries in the kite. I was there in the wake style days when it was really hard landings and really tough on the body. So my hip got destroyed. I actually got a new hip last year.
Oh, really?
No, actually this year in April. I'm 48 now, and I've smashed the body too much. So I wore down the hip, got a new one, and now it works great. So now I can actually foil like never before. So it's cool.
What do you foil? What kind of foiling did you do?
All kinds, but really into downwinding with the SUP. I like that a lot.
Oh, and, wow.
And SUP surfing is really good where we are, because we live where we have the surfer's office. It's a small town called Kåseberga on the south coast of Sweden by the Baltic Sea. And it's a really good longboarding spot. And it's also a really good foiling spot. And it's not very crowded. We're not a lot of people yet foiling. So we're sort of outside the surfers and catching the longest waves. And it's fantastic. Like, we have several days a week where we can go foil surfing or winging, or now para-winging. I just learned as well. So I have to get into that. But downwinding is fantastic here as well. We have the wind generator swell. It's very organized. Quite good bumps compared to many other places, and very accessible. A lot of beaches, a lot of easy starts in and out. It's a fantastic place for foiling. We always travel a lot to go surfing or kiting, but now we have a good spot here.
Very nice.
So that's cool. And that I guess like a lot of other places.
That sounds amazing.
You rediscover home.
How's your parawing journey been?
It's just starting. Well, I had a quick go in Tenerife last year, just trying it during a session, figured it's harder than I thought. But just a month ago, I bought a para wing. I bought the 777.
Right, they're so good.
It's good. It's good. It's stable. And I got it from a recommendation from a friend. And struggled a bit here at home because it was either too much wind or too little wind. And it had gotten cold enough, so I had to use gloves and boots. And I felt really, you know, a little bit clumsy with all this gear. But then I went with some friends to Fuerteventura last week. And there it really kicked in, because I could go without, you know, all the gear. I could go upwind now suddenly.
Nice.
I could stay upwind and start to figure out how to, you know, take down the wing and surf a bit and then redeploy. And it's really fun. It's got some potential. So for sure, going to do more of that and explore that. Alongside with still paddling, I really like paddling with the foil still. So I'm going to keep on doing that.
It's great if you know everything, so you can adjust to the situation, the wind, the waves. That's really cool.
For sure, definitely.
All right, so let's maybe get into that product. You said that yes, you wanted something where you can still hear. Another question, maybe before that, is balance also a problem if it's just closed the ear?
Yeah. Exactly. So what I learned during all those years using all kinds of obscure earplugs that took away very much of the sound was that they blocked the sound, they blocked the whole experience, they blocked the communication, you know, skills, because you can't talk to people, you can't hear people. It's also safety obstruction in terms of somebody, you know, dropping in on you and having to scream at you. But they do definitely also do something with the balance. It's not quantified exactly how that works, but but for sure, hearing is part of the balance. And I definitely feel that when I wear earplugs under a hood, under a helmet, the balance is sort of off. You kind of readjust, but it does affect. And I mean, we did design Surfers based on the same technology that is used in mobile phones, and these meshes and membranes in mobile phones. I used to work at Nokia for many years, developing mobile phones. That's how I got to know this technology. These materials are designed for protecting speakers and microphones while transmitting sound as, you know, undistracted as possible, because you still want good sound coming out of your speaker, but you don't want dust and dirt and water coming in. So these materials have been around for some time and they're very sophisticated. It's extremely tight woven meshes and membranes that are produced in Italy, actually, because those are it's the only country they can produce such fine weaves.
Really?
To date.
Wow.
They have the weaving industry heritage and they're extremely good at that. So those materials are critical for transmitting sound while blocking stuff you don't want getting in. And that kind of material worked perfectly as well for an earplug. And then there are many different variants of that and densities. And depending on the depth you're going, for example, you could choose to have a denser one. But we figured we tried a bunch of different materials, a bunch of different designs for a product with a 3D printer at the time, just putting it in our ears, going in the water, trying it, getting the first-hand experience, going back, redesigning, and doing it again and again. And figured we found a good balance between watertight enough, almost hearing like normal. It takes away a little bit of the higher frequencies, not so much of the lower, or the speaking range frequencies are quite intact as well. And that makes up a plug that sort of you kind of forget it's there. You put it in, it needs to be super comfortable because you're really sensitive in your ear as well. Mm-hmm. And that's something we worked a lot on over the years. And the first plug was good. The second one, we upgraded a bit in terms of ergonomics. The third one, even more. And the fourth one now is really good in form of fit. It's good in sealing the water and it's really durable as well. Like we really redesigned it for being, you pay a premium for Surfers, and we want it to last for years. If you take care of it, it should last for a very long time. So that's like, we've been trying to deliver, you know, a product that is so good that you feel happy with it. Like you're happy you spent those $60.
All right.
Because it will save you some doctor costs later for sure.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Christian, I'm standing on a balance board. So if I'm wobbling around because of the, cool. I'm trying to balance kind of a little bit of training in. I thought we'd play a little game because obviously you're 100% for that product. You say it's important. And I thought I'd play a little devil's advocate or just like say why I won't use it and you tell me no, why I should actually use it. Is that okay?
Yeah, for sure.
Because, I mean, I just got these Shocks, the waterproof earpods, and there's a little earplug come with it for free. So why should I get these?
Yeah, well, basically, they work really good. If you have these bone conduction earbuds or in your music plugs, Surfers basically help you hear the environment, hear whatever's going on around you, keep your balance, talk to people while you're listening to this music that's actually transmitted through your bone instead of your ear canal. So if you're blocking out the ears at the same time, you might maybe hear the music even more, but you do lose the surfing experience and you do lose the ability to communicate or hear what's going on around you. Say you're pump fording in a lake and there's a boat, you want to know the boat is coming, for example.
All right, makes a lot of sense. Then now it's getting cold and I'm wearing a hood already, so my ears pretty closed, and if water gets in, it's usually warm. Why should I wear surf ears?
Yeah, no, but that's two facts. Basically, the very first years of a surfer's life cycle, if you say, in terms of building ear problems, is no problem. You can use a hood in the winter. The problem is spring and autumn. Spring and autumn is when you take off the hood, the air is still pretty cool, the water is still pretty cool, your ears get wet, and there's a wind chill. The wind chill effect makes like a fridge in your ear, basically. So it can be 15 degrees out, but with some cold ears and a lot of wind, it's 5 degrees in your ear canal. And it's like, there are a bunch of studies on surfer's ear related to surfing, time in the water, frequency of surfing, and temperature. So it shows that roughly 6 years of surfing in 18 degrees or colder, three times a week, 100% certainty you have surfer's ear. Or very close to 100%. Like it's very, we have a bunch of studies. We have a collaboration with a bunch of doctors as well. So we get a lot of this information because they want us to help spread that, awareness around why you should care. And they love our product because it helps people postpone whatever problems they might get. But it's just a fact that cold water builds, you have very thin skin. You have no fat under the skin in your ear. Cold water increases circulation. That circulation induces growth of cartilage, thin layers of cartilage, every time you go in the water. Eventually, that cartilage converts to bone, and bone lumps start to form. So in the very beginning, you won't notice anything happening. You have a small lump, then you have a little bigger lump, and then you have two lumps, and then these lumps meet. And eventually, the water drop gets in, but it stays there because it gets sucked by capillary effect to these lumps. It can attract sand, dust, bacterial stuff. It stays in there. And then you get ear infection much easier. If you go to warm waters, it's even worse because then you have a lot more bad stuff in the water and it stays in there and you get infection. So it's two different problems, but they're related. And you won't notice until it's quite late. So we've done a lot of these ear checks. We have this visual little camera, pen camera, and we do checks in surf shops and surf events. Just as informative, you know, have a look in your ear. If something's going on, go to the doctor. We can help you prevent it. But if something's really bad in your ear, you should maybe do the operation anyways. But it's basically a matter of time. And the amount of surfers that have surfer's ear increase in cold countries. But the amount of people that have ear problems are probably the same in warm countries. It's just different ear problems. So okay. It's as important to actually wear earplugs in warm waters as in cold, but you get different types of problems in these, places.
I have a last one because I'm almost 40 now and I've been sailing since I was a little kid. I was out in the wind and the waters all the time. Now, not that much anymore, maybe once a week. So for me, surfer's ear is not really a problem, is it?
Well, you can't be sure because we have seen even truck drivers riding with a windshield down or with a window down, having a lot of wind chill in the ear, building up something looking like surfer's ear, bone growth, or exostosis, as it's called. So, and we have done ear checks on sailors who haven't surfed a lot, also found that they had surf ears. You can build that from cold water swimming. You can build that from any activity where it's cold and wet. So basically, you could get it from sailing, especially maybe dinghy sailing, where there's a lot of water flowing, you know, a lot of splashing and stuff. So you can't be sure even as a sailor that you're free from surfer's ear. The best thing is to actually go check your ears wherever you can, at the doctor or a surf shop that has one of our cameras.
All right.
To know if there's something in there.
I have a last one. As you said, they're quite expensive. And I'm going to lose them for sure because they're small.
So they are small, and definitely people do unfortunately lose them from time to time. What we have done to sort of help make it harder to lose them is there's a silicone leash. So you hang them around the neck with a little loop and you put them in the ears. And if you drop one, it will still stay with you. The very first version we had didn't have the leash. So if you lost one, you actually lost it. You had to swim and get it. So if you use it like that, it stays with you. And then, of course, when you're not surfing, if you keep them in the case, there's a carabiner to the case. If you hook that to your, you know, dry bag or your keychain, the risk of losing them is smaller. But for sure, it's a small product and it happens from time to time, definitely.
All right. Well, thank you much for that. That was fun. When I think about your product and something as individual or different from person to person as an ear, I remember like the Apple keynotes where they always say if they come out with new earphones, like, yeah, we tested it on tens of thousands of people and that's like the optimum and it suits the most people. And then 1 or 2 years later said, it's even better now, which I don't understand because like ears of people are still the same if you take tens of thousands. But anyway, how difficult was it for you to get something? Well, you have three different like inserts, right?
But we have four actually. Four of the small tips that they put on the very end.
How but difficult right. was it to get something that is suited for as many people? These right.
Yeah, you're right. It's very hard and it's very individual. And many people had a little bit different sized left or right ear as well. So what really? We did, we did also do a lot of studies. We tested them on a lot of people, different ages. We also studied a lot of the ear autonomy. There's like after Nokia, I helped set up a consulting company and we did a lot of headphones as well. And studying headphones, we had to study ears a lot. So we had books on ears and you know, what the ear canal is like, what an average ear canal is like. We had a lot of 3D models of ears. We tried to, in what you see in this little small accessory pack is a range of ear tips that goes from a very small diameter to a very or quite large diameter. So they're supposed to fit like 95% of ears. There are exceptions. There are people that have too small ears. There are people that have too big ears. But basically, usually it fits down to, you know, kids from 8, 10 years up to people with large ears, like very large ears. And if you look at how you put it on the ear plug, you can actually put it out. You can adjust the position in or out on the ear plug as well.
Yeah.
So if you put the tip on, the first click is for placing it deeper inside the ear. For example, if you have a larger ear, you can choose to put it further out on the plastic tube.
I'll try to show it here.
Because then you get, if you just do one click, you have it further out. And then it comes a little bit further into the ear.
Yeah.
If you push it one more in.
Ear, huh?
Yes. If you push it one more in, it comes 2 millimeters further in or further out actually in the ear. And it's shallower in the ear. That's also to adjust for if you already have surfer's ear or the oxystosis, the bone growth. You can't fit the Christmas tree earplugs that go really far in. Because you have bone, you can't get it in there. So you need to fit it shallow. So this plug can still be used if you have surfer's ear because it usually sits outside of the bone growth. So that's adjusting for that. But all those four pieces of adjustability, like one is pre-mounted and three additional, going from very small to quite large. And then two different size of the wings that click in your ear concha, this is called. And then one option without the wing, we call it, which is the smallest part, like a rubber ring. That's also on there. If you want to use either if you have really small ears or if you figure that the wing is uncomfortable or if you use it under the hood or helmet, people find that one more comfortable in the winter time.
Good. I might try that because I'm going to go pump foiling on Saturday and it will be the first time with a hood.
So, okay. Yeah. Try it because it's less of an obstruction if you have that smallest ring around it.
All right. Well, that's super interesting. You kind of became kind of a ear specialist, kind of like a doctor in that area. Huh?
Yeah, by accident, sort of. I mean, we have done a lot of ear checks. I probably have looked in as much ear, many ears as a junior doctor for sure. and you do learn a lot about what kind of issues people have in and around water. And they ask all kinds of other questions around ears as well. But we know doctors, but we know a lot about ears by now, for sure, by accident from this product. But it's fun. It helps people a lot. That's a sort of good part of the business is people are happy about. When they bought it, they feel that, okay, wow, this helps to stay in the water. I don't ruin the holidays because I didn't get ear infection. And like in the US where doctor visits are expensive, it's pretty good to save, you know, money on that as well.
That's true. All right. Well, before we get into that like early stage of your company, like the startup phase, Christian, do you have kids?
Yeah, I have one son. He's 12 years now.
Does he surf? Does he do water sports? Does he use them?
He does water sports. He has them. He doesn't use them a lot.
How do you feel when he doesn't use them?
Well, as most kids, he doesn't think it's really necessary yet. I think you do have time before serious growth happens, but I will try to ask him to use it during spring and autumn when he surfs without the hood in Sweden. Okay, but he wears the hood quite late in the spring and quite early in the autumn because it's a little bit cold when surfing. So he's protected by that at least.
All right. Good. So let's get back. What is it now? 13 years.
Yeah.
Wow. When you started surf years. Were you still at Nokia then? Or actually, did Nokia still exist then?
No, so at Nokia, I worked at Nokia. I was based in Copenhagen, but worked at different locations around the world. So at the time when Nokia decided to close their office in Copenhagen, I was based in San Diego, actually.
Oh, wow, nice. Also cold water, time, huh?
Yeah, warm water. At that time, I didn't have so much ear problems. I had a period of good ears as well. But with Nokia closing down, sort of got a kick in the butt to start a business because I always wanted to do that. I had businesses before, but not something I worked on full time. So we did effort to start a consulting company, sort of tech consulting, with a bunch of ex-Nokia colleagues, or four of us we were. And as a side project during the first year, we knew we wanted to do consulting, but we knew we wanted to do products as well. And the first product we wanted to sort of try out was surfers, because I was really persistent on that. Like, we have a potential. I know there's a problem. We can do something better here. We have a lot of knowledge in that area of acoustics. We had a 3D printer. I did some initial designs in CAD, and we printed them and built stuff, you know, next to other products, and tried it. And it sort of worked. And I think all of us basically were surfing in one or other form, and our friends were surfing. So we gave products out, 3D printed products in the beginning, and people gave us good feedback. It was working. It wasn't really perfect. It leaked some water, but it showed the proof of concept. Like, we had an earplug. You could keep the water out. You could hear really nice. What was cool, one of the first samples I had, I tested when I went to Barbados in the winter for a surf trip. And I used them with snorkeling as well. And snorkeling with surf ears is pretty cool because you have dry ears when you go underwater. So you hear like on land, but underwater. And that's a really, really cool experience when you try it for the first time. Normally you have water against the eardrum and then you hear everything quite muted.
Yeah, like just
and you hear sounds transplanting a long way, but it's really muted everything. With an earplug like surf ears that just has a membrane or mesh against the water, you get the same sensation of hearing like on land, but underwater. So you hear everything super clearly.
Wow.
Like, I could hear the reef, you know, popping like this, but much clearer than if I was not wearing earplugs. So then I started thinking, wow, we have something that could work for divers as well. But we didn't really do anything with that at the time. We focused on surfing because we knew that I knew so many people that had ear problems. And that's where we sort of got the first traction. But now we're working a lot with divers, a lot. And they're really liking the product as well. So that's pretty cool. But that was sort of the beginning. We had this problem. We found a good solution to it. We put it out on the market as a Kickstarter campaign.
Okay.
Because that was the thing back then. That's what you did if you had an idea. You put it on Kickstarter and you checked if there was any market for it, any people who wanted to buy it. And there was enough people who wanted to buy it. It was not a huge campaign. I think we sold 400 surfers, something like that. But still enough to feel that, okay, there's 400 people that want our product. There's probably more. And the cool thing with that campaign, it also gave a lot of exposure to, you know, potential distributors, to retailers, to people who wanted to work with us in one or another way. So through that, we found our first retail channels, for example, our first shops, our first distributor. And then eventually we teamed up with the larger distributor based in Australia called Creatures of Leisure, who then helped us secure, you know, placement in surf shops around the world. And it was at that time when it started to become a brand, because building a small brand from scratch, not, you know, nobody knowing about it, it's really tough. We had to, you know, convince a lot of people to want to work with us. And I mean, the surf shops where the surf shop owner had the problems, that was easy because they understood. Like, yeah, the very first shop in the world that sold surfers was 58 Surf in Peniche. And the owner of that shop at the time, I think he's still owning it, Ivo, he understood. He had the problems. He was like, spot on, we buy it.
Nice, nice.
And it was a super cool and organic journey. Did it from super small, from scratch. We just let it take the time it did, and we had, you know, other revenue coming in from consulting products we did.
Nice.
Which was sort of a good situation because we didn't have to live from it from day one. So we said we're going to give it like a year and see where it goes. And after that year, we decided to make a separate company out of Surfers, and that's what's called Ear Labs today.
That's we had still the company today, huh?
Yeah, that's still the company today. Exactly.
So, those were still, those 400 units that you had were sold on Kickstarter. Were they 3D printed by yourself still?
No, no. So those were pre-sold. So it was based on a like, we had a mock-up. We had the supplier set up in China. We had our agreements on, you know, what's it going to cost, what parts are required, what's the investment to kick off the tooling, stuff like that. Because that was my job in Nokia. So we had a lot of, you know, knowledge
you had connections
on how to
already.
Set that up. Exactly.
All right.
So we had contacts, but that supplier was a new one. But working with suppliers in China is not super easy if you haven't done it before, because you can really, well, it's difficult for a number of reasons, but you can really get ripped off if you don't, you know, get the right partners. And there's really a good chance of misunderstanding, which can cost you a lot if you do the wrong mistakes. So we knew what it was going to cost to do the product, to get the tooling made, to do the first 1,000 or so parts. And that's sort of the amount we put out on Kickstarter. We need this amount of money to do this product, pay for this tooling, and do the first batch. So when we had pre-sold those 250 units, we had, of course, a shipping date where we had to promise these customers to deliver on that date. And that's the time we had to sort of realize the project in China. We actually made that happen quite spot on. I don't think we even were delayed on the delivery for the first surfers, which was impressive.
Which is not
because
normal
there's so many Kickstarter
stuff.
Exactly. So that was good. And then we had sort of financed the very start of the first, you know, tooling and stuff for the product. And that's when we could start taking orders, basically. And of course, we had to risk some because we had to place at least maybe 1,000 units or so and distribute that out to the stores that we had. And we did try to start selling online also from the start, but it was very slow. Like, online sale was not really a big thing at the time, or it was starting sort of, but it was not something we knew how to do really well. So we put up a Shopify in our account and put it out there and sold one or two maybe a week.
Oh, really? Wow.
But with the help from the shops, with the help from especially from Creatures that, you know, helped us get out into a large number of surf stores, we got visibility. Yeah. And somehow people saw it there. They bought it there, but they also bought it online eventually. So that helped us gain exposure and become more of a known brand, which in turn helped our online sales. But what we always try to do is sort of work on both aspects, not just trying to sell as much ourselves, but help our retailers sell our product as well to support them as much as we can. So right now we have a super good collaboration still with Creatures since many years back. So we started working with them in 2014 or 2015, I think it was. So it's actually 10 years with them. It's super cool. And they're great at what they're doing, getting the product out there to all the retail stores and, you know, creating the exposure that helps us a lot. And we try to support them as much as we can as well. So
it's a
really good collaboration.
Very nice. When I think about a product like this, the cool thing, if you want to sell it in a shop, is it's not super big. So shipping or even like displaying at the cash register is super, super easy. But then again, sorry to say, it's not a very sexy product. It's not like a board or a wing. It's something for your health, which is, you know, important. We know we're older, but like for young kids, it's, well,
I know,
you know, I'm going to care about it later. Prophylaxis is a problem anyway, because if there's no problem, why should you use it? How much marketing did you have to like, or how much did you have to invest in marketing to really show that? Because you're all over my Instagram.
No, you're right. It's not the first you think of, like, wow, I need to go buy an earplug because you want
I want to buy earplugs. Looks fun.
it's not a sexy product category as such. It's not. So what we try to do from a very early stage was just try to get it in the hands and ears of people that needed it. Yeah. And people who sort of had sort of a following, like influencers at the time. And it was actually funny because we nearly never had to pay anyone to use Surf Ears, and because they needed Surf Ears. Like when they saw the product, they realized, okay, I spend a lot of time in the water. Some people live as athletes. They're sort of depending on being in the water a lot. They need stuff to help protect you. So these people do care about, you know, how to protect their ears and how to protect their skin and how to protect, you know, their body from the elements and from impact or from injury. And they actually came to us, mostly. We didn't reach out a lot in the beginning. We did in some instances, but most people came to us and asking for product, and they gave us some exposure in return. That was how we built the brand the first years, quite many years, actually. Now, when we're sort of moving into new categories, I mean, we are working still a lot in surfing, but for example, when we want to reach divers, it's basically the same. We find the good people who need the product, get the product to them. If they're happy with the product, they're usually happy to speak about the product as well. Some, especially today, with sort of an influencer culture, they have for sure, they need to make money on their living. So for sure, some stuff that we do are paid collaborations, but it's always the case that the person needed the product and likes the product. Otherwise, we choose not to work with them because we don't want to just, you know, have somebody who actually doesn't care about the product speak about the product because it's not trustworthy. But it's one way to keep building the brand, and you can't, you know, do it for free forever. So of course we spend today quite a lot of money to be visible online, because that's the only way to drive online sales. Mm-hmm. Like one, you can pay for ads that does something. You can pay for search terms, search words for placement there. There's ads on Google as well. But something that's really works for us is collaborations with organizations or people that need the product, that like the product, and that have no, you know, objection to being seen or talk about the product in their community. Because if they talked about the product in a positive way, when they actually really believing it, that's what gives us the greatest impact. So that's what we're focusing more on today.
Right. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. As I said, you're on my Instagram all the time. And then I went to your website because I wanted to learn more. And there's so much information. I think difficult because people usually don't read. They just like make their opinion out of like pictures and whatnot. Then I saw that you not only have the Surf Ears, you have many different products. Maybe you can quickly share what you have and what you're all selling.
Yeah, for sure. So sometimes actually it's misunderstood on our site that we have several different variants for different sports. It's actually not a lot of different variants. It's actually the same product, but we try to have landing pages for different sports talking about why for that sport this product is important. So if you go to our site and go to earplugs for divers, earplugs for surfers, it's the same product. It's just, it has some different values to different customers depending on how you're using it. That's why we have it structured that way. But the current products we have right now is Surfers, the fourth generation, 4.0 in two colors. And then we have a junior product as well. That's basically a reduced version of Surfers with the smallest tips at the slightly reduced price points. Yeah, for juniors and kids to be able to get earplugs without breaking the wallet for the parents. On our site, you can also find our completely different side of the business, which is a noise attenuating earplug called D-Bud. So maybe you saw like an upsell product there. You might also be interested in this. And that's a totally different side of the business that has nothing really to do with surf ears. But it was a side product to surf ears where a DJ in Portugal put surf ears in his ears while DJing. I was like, okay, maybe we can do something there. And that spun off into adjustable earplug where you can set the volume on the fly. It's mechanical. It's also got filters, acoustic filters. And that one is sold in music stores by a different company. But that's a totally different part of our business. But you can also buy it on Surface because people go to concerts sometimes. And that's why it's there. But our site is a lot about informing, because there's a big lack of information about why wear earplugs. Why should I care? Like you say, like a teenager, why they don't know that they should care. They don't know what they're.
They don't care what happens in 10 years. That's so far off. Yeah.
And we're finding that the more we try to educate and we do these ear checks out on events and surf stores, with or without parents, we actually get younger and younger people to care and to buy. Especially women buy at a younger age than men. Men seem to care less
also
for longer.
Also makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. but sure, I mean, we have a lot of customers who are in their 30s and up, because that's where you usually see the problems. If you started surfing at, 20 or 15, but if you, like in Portugal, if you start surfing at 7, you have problems at 15. And that's what we see as well. Yeah, well. So these parents start to care about their kids quite early, and with the cold water and cold wind from Portugal, they know that they're going to get problems for sure.
All right. Makes a lot of sense. You said that the products you're selling, I saw on the website, there are over 500,000 units sold. How big is the company? How many people work there? What's your daily job in the company?
Yeah, so yeah, we've probably delivered right now 600,000-700,000 surveys. So it's growing a lot. So it's pretty cool. It's a lot of people. I think still a lot of those products are in the water. Some are on the bottom, fortunately. But yeah. a lot of products are in use still, which is cool. We're a small company, 5.5 full-time staff in the company, not more than that. Then we're a couple of consultants helping out on specialized areas like the back end for the like for the web or the Google optimization, stuff like that. And then we have an external sales network, but that's not our company. That's Creatures of Leisure doing their distribution of the product. But the core team is small. It's basically, I'm responsible for all the product development still, and I take in extra consultants when I need to. I do use other designers and other engineers when I need extra help. But I really enjoy doing a lot of that work myself with the updates and upgrades and improvements of the product, both for the surf ear side and for the D-Bud, which is our noise attenuating product. And then we have a team of, e-commerce focused roles and social media that work. It's like Susanne and Oda, they're doing a lot of the stuff you see on the web, a lot of the collaborations. And we have Anders and Karen, they run a little bit of the sales and operations. And Anders is more focused on the retail side, but also a lot, looking at our ads and placing those. And then Karen is doing all the operation stuff and financials and, all the stuff that I'm not so good at. So it's a small tight team, but at the moment we're fine being, slim, and we're gonna expand a bit, but we're taking it easy. I mean, a lot of companies went up and then went down quite fast when they burnt a lot of money. So we're doing it more of a careful approach. Definitely.
Yes, I was just gonna say, because the surf ears, now this version 4, you said.
What's that?
Which version is that? The one
this is the fourth
iteration. Has there been a difference in material? If I look at the product like that, I would say, well, once this product is done, there's not really much you can do about it. How do you want to make it better, or isn't it good enough already?
Yeah, you could think that, definitely, and that's quite a common thing that people think, like, this is an earplug, how much can you develop an earplug? But actually quite a lot. I mean, look at Apple, they have like 15 generations of iPhones.
That's true. That's true.
Six generations or seven of the in-ears. Of course, there's more technology in there. But even on this one, like from the first generation to the second, there were improvements to the third. And to this one, like if you look from the third to the fourth generation, the main improvements are durability. Like we rebuilt the construction of the product. The acoustic mesh, that's the barrier against the water, is now inside the product. It's welded inside the product, basically. So it can never come off. The only way you can destroy it is by puncturing it with the tool, sort of. So it will last longer than it's ever done. Also, we looked a lot at what we could do from sustainability point of view, like working with recycled plastics wherever we can. Having some concept of recycled silicone, because that's a hard material to recycle, but you can sort of grind it down and actually reuse it as granulate in part of the new material process. And then the packaging, removing, you know, that in itself as much as possible, basically having no packaging. The case is the packaging, but you have a small wrapping around, which is also the instructions, which you might actually want to keep, and it's very small. And then, of course, it's like working with the design to make something that's visually standing out and looks good. But I think that even in the future, we're going to keep innovating this product, because you can do stuff. It's such fine, small mechanics that make great detail in how it fits, how it feels, and how it works. I mean, potentially you could combine this with music, for example. That's one way to do
it. I was going
to
say that. Yeah. Any plans on that?
We have had plans on it, and it's like we looked at that category, and it was not going super well for those who did it at the time. So we that's what we found, at least. So we haven't done it yet. I haven't ruled it out, because I know people who do listen to music on the water, and if you could have one product in the ears instead of two, like a Bunkenafty plus Surface, that would be better. So not ruling it out. It could be a fun product to do, definitely. And maybe we're also expanding on other sort of, you know, essential surf tech accessories that can help you on the water. We'll see.
But all in water sports. I love that. Christian, how much time do you actually get to go in the water? Like, you're the head of, yes, you said a small team, but still, it's a lot of, I'd say it's a good amount of people. Do you get time to like take days off to go surfing if there's a good wind?
Yeah, for sure. Waves? I mean, the good thing with this setup is we're also a remote team. So we're not, you know, all in the office all at once. We're actually never in the office all at once, basically. And the office is 5 minutes from where I live, and the office is by the sea, by a surf spot.
Wow.
So we can actually go down when we're in the office. We can, you know, just take our foil or surfboard, go down, surf for an hour or two, then go back and work. So it's really cool. And it's a spot which works for the most common wind directions here, which is like west, west, southwest, east. So that's a good setup. And well, keeping it small, the company also creates less trouble. Having a bigger company than you need to, more staff than you need to, more complex products than you need to, or more products than you need to add complexity and just steal time. So we have done a journey where we were 10, 12 people in the company 3 years ago, just before around COVID. That was maybe even a little bit earlier, and did a growth spurt where we were doing electronic products on the other side of our company, where Debud was the main focus, doing, you know, in-ear, wireless, do-it-all, hearing protectors. We took in a lot of money and we burnt a lot of money, and we put that product in the bin after COVID, because COVID changed everything, basically. Investors got sort of totally cold, couldn't really raise any more money, and we had come halfway that journey. So we had a really good functional product that we were planning to launch, but it was too high risk. So we decided to go back to the core surfers, refocus on that. And that was probably a good decision, because many of the companies that we were working with at the time, they just don't exist anymore. They ran into, you know, trouble, running out of money, basically.
That's very smart. And you can always, like, if there's good wind or waves, you can always say that you need to test a new prototype or something and get out
that's
of the water.
That's a good thing. Surf trip is always a form of work.
It's work. You kind of have to do it, which is awesome. Well, exactly. Christian, I'm pretty much through with my list. Is there anything else that you want to share with the audience?
Well, I think if you get the chance, we try to do these ear checks from time to time at events or at stores. And we even have stores that have our camera. And it's always free. So if you see us doing ear checks somewhere, just pop by, have a camera in your ear, like see what's inside. You might find something before it's too late. And then you can start wearing earplugs and you can prevent it from growing further. Because the only way to stop it from growing is keep your ears warm. So join one of our ear check events if you can.
Do you have them somewhere on your website or on Instagram?
Usually on Instagram. We put them up in advance where they are. We might, if we get more organized, we can do it on the website as well and have a planned tour. But for now, it's more ad hoc. When we're at places, we try to do it in as many places as we can, at the local shops and some bigger trade fairs or so. So Instagram is the place to find out.
All right. At Surf Ears, that's where people should follow. Well, then thank you very much, Christian, for coming on the show. It was a pleasure. And I hope to see you on the water sometime.
Thank you, Matthias. Yes, for sure. And that would be fun. We'll come down to Switzerland and pump foil with you for sure.
All right.
You should come to the Baltic.
I will. Definitely. I'll hit you up. All right, Matt. Have a good afternoon.
For sure. All right. You too, man.